Greetings, friends. In the Maggia Sutta, the Buddha teaches Maggia five qualities that bring awakening, or full human maturity. This talk includes Sangha Q&A and discussion, and concludes with meta-intentional meditation. This talk was recorded at our Tuesday evening Dhamma class in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on August 30th, 2016. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation through crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you.
Again, good evening, everyone. I want to welcome John to our Sangha. John, this is everyone. That's John. John's first time here. Tonight's talk is on the Maggia Sutta. So while I'm reading and talking about the article, if you have any questions that relate to the talk, please put your hand up. And then after we meditate, we'll go around and have time for comments and discussion. In the Maggia Sutta, the Buddha teaches Maggia five qualities that bring awakening or full human maturity. Maggia, having taken refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Buddha Sangha, and living as a monk for a reasonable amount of time, finds himself still troubled by three unwholesome qualities of mind. In seclusion, the thought arises in Maggia, "It is indeed strange and remarkable. I have gone forth from home to homelessness and have been developing the Dhamma, yet I continue to be overwhelmed by three troubling kinds of thoughts: sensual thoughts, malevolent thoughts, and cruel thoughts." Maggia seeks out the Buddha one afternoon. "Reverend teacher, I continue to be troubled by sensual thoughts, by malevolent thoughts, and by cruel thoughts." Maggia, "When your mindfulness is not fully refined, still immature, there are five qualities that develop full maturity and the cessation of troubling qualities of mind. The first quality to develop are skillful and honorable friends and associations. Avoid unskillful, distracting, and troubling associations." And that idea of being mindful of your associations is something that is throughout the Pali Canon. The Buddha addresses that as a basic fundamental quality to develop, almost more so than in importance as the overall development of the Eightfold Path, because associations are the same as clinging. And who we associate with and what we associate ourselves with will determine in a great extent what we're going to become. So you can practice all you want the Eightfold Path, but if you're associating with what the Buddha would use the term fools or unskillful people, you're likely going to be stuck at some point because of that association. The first thing he teaches to Maggia. The second quality to develop is restraint in conduct, avoiding the danger and even the slightest transgressions. Train yourself to keep all the precepts and to practice right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The third quality to develop is speech that is effacing and that does not promote the ego self. Effacing speech relaxes the mind and conduces toward dispassion, peace, direct knowledge, unbinding, enlightenment, and nibbana. So isn't that so important? If you think about that, when I'm not so concerned in my speech about am I continuing to maintain my ego self, my mind will be relaxed as a natural consequence of not having that need to be eye-making continually in my talking. The fourth quality to develop is energy and right effort for abandoning unwholesome qualities and developing wholesome qualities of mind. So one of the ways the Buddha teaches right effort is to be mindful of unwholesome qualities and behaviors and to engage in a life that is full of wholesome and skillful behaviors. It's part of right effort. And it's simply directing our effort towards the framework of the Eightfold Path or that the Eightfold Path describes for us. The fourth quality to develop, I just read that. Be vigorous and persevering with regard to wholesome qualities. The fifth quality to develop is wisdom born of penetrative knowledge of the arising and passing away of suffering. Knowledge with regard to the Four Noble Truths. So there the last is the Buddhist reminding Maggia to continue to develop right view or view imbued with wisdom through maintaining the Eightfold Path. It is to be expected, Maggia, that one who has skillful friends and associates, that they will be restrained in conduct and follow the precepts. One who has skillful friends and associates will be effacing in speech, conducing their mind towards direct knowledge and unbinding. One who has skillful friends will have the energy and effort to abandon unwholesome qualities and develop wholesome qualities. One who has skillful friends will be wise, will have the wisdom born of penetrative knowledge of the arising and passing away of suffering. knowledge with regard to the Four Noble Truths. So even there, the Buddha's talking in an even more finer or refined way to choose your friends wisely, especially when you're choosing a Sangha. Huh? And remember, he's talking to Magia, who's one of the monks of his Sangha. Furthermore, Magia, one who has established these five qualities should develop four additional qualities. Sensual, this is all developed through the Eightfold Path. Sensual craving should be abandoned. Metta, or goodwill or loving kindness, should be cultivated. Mindfulness of the breath should be maintained to interrupt discursive and conditioned thinking, just to keep ourselves in our place and in life as life occurs. Impermanence should be fully understood to cease I-making and understand not-self. When the interplay between impermanence and not-self, or anicca and anatta, and I-making is abandoned, and suffering ends. This is nibbana, right here, right now, the Buddha concludes, right here, right now. So he's reminding Magia, and I'm assuming, it's not told in the beginning of the sutta if he's just addressing Magia, but I'm assuming he's addressing all of the monks. He's reminding them that awakening, or full human maturity, is developed right here, right now. You're not doing something for the future, although for some of us our awakening might take a little bit more than the next few minutes, but it's in the immediate present moment that awakening occurs. And that again puts the importance on what he just taught Magia, isn't it? So it's not enough to say, no, it's okay for me to hang out in the bars a couple nights a week. Can't bother me. If I really want to awaken, I'll look at that association. Or I'm using an extreme example, but it could be just people that tend to use social interaction simply as a distraction. If I want to awaken right here, right now, it's time to look at those associations. It's time to look at the sensual cravings that are still involved. Like Magia was saying, those three troubled mind states. He still had need for sensory input, even while he's developing the Eightfold Path. He still had hurtful thoughts towards other people, malevolent thoughts. And he was still cruel in the way that he addressed certain people. He hadn't developed metta. And so the Buddha gave him, in addition to the Eightfold Path, a very practical way to look at his behavior moment by moment. And then again, reminding Magia, it's right here and right now that we develop this Dhamma.
I'm surprised that Magia, being a member of the Sangha, would have to be told that even in the Sangha, you would need to be careful who you deal
with. Yeah, and remember that he came to the Buddha with a very specific question. Specific question, I have trouble talking to them. And so the Buddha is addressing why these mind states are still continuing. So who knows what Magia is doing when he's going in on his alms rounds? Or other things. But most importantly, it's what's going on in his mind right here, right now. So even in our... as we deepen our understanding and deepen our concentration and deepen the framework of the Eightfold Path, on our cushions, we might start realizing that, you know, maybe this association that I'm having with this person or this group of people is a distraction rather than a support. So it's something that we want to look at. And again, the Buddha never said, don't have any associations. He didn't say, go live in a cave. But he says repeatedly, I mean, I couldn't count the times that I come across it in the Pali Canon, repeatedly, associations are so important. Because that's a direct example of the quality of our mind and what we're attached to, what we're clinging to.
At some point, he says, it's better to live alone than to associate with fools.
Yeah, yeah. And again, he says that repeatedly. And it's not because fools are bad in a moral sense. It's because they're going to distract you, or distract one, from the path. So the Buddha assumes that if you're on the path, you're developing the Eightfold Path, you're sincere about awakening. You don't want to waste your time. So it's a very concise teaching. The Buddha finishes with verse. Trivial thoughts, subtle thoughts, mental reactions that continue to distract, not understanding conditioned thinking, one wanders endlessly in samsara. Samsara is just another word for ignorance. Understanding the roots of ignorance, the ardent and mindful restrains ignorance. Restrains ignorance, isn't that an interesting little sentence? Restrain, how can I restrain ignorance? Well, I have to first learn what is wisdom. And then I can hold it back. Then I can, when ignorance seems to be arising in my mindfulness and my thoughts, I can put a brake on it. it's possible to restrain ignorant thoughts and then develop thoughts that are inclined towards wisdom, towards right view. The ardent and mindful restrains ignorance. The fully awakened completely abandons ignorance and the mental reactions that continue to distract. Awakening is right here, right now. That's the end of the sutta. In this concise teaching to Magiya, the Buddha is placing great importance on having admirable friends and associates. This can easily be seen as an aspect of right view and initial wisdom. Restraint in conduct refers to right intention as the resolve necessary to abandon unskillful behavior. Being mindful of right speech, right action, and right livelihood provides the refined mindfulness necessary to recognize unskillful thoughts, words, and actions. Effacing speech diminishes eye-making and conceit. Enthusiasm for developing the Dhamma. You know what the root word, the Latin root of enthusiasm is entos? And that means to be inspired, to be truly inspired. And this is that enthusiasm for the Dhamma is the true spiritual foundation for developing the Dhamma, isn't it? It carries us through when doubt and maybe laziness or tiredness is no longer there. But we have that enthusiasm. We're enthused with the spirit of the Dhamma. Effacing speech diminishes eye-making and conceit. Enthusiasm for developing the Dhamma is an aspect of right view and knowing that the most profound and useful teachings of all time continues. True Dhamma lineage is established in each mind that engages with the Eightfold Path. One who has penetrated the three marks of existence, anicca, anatta, and dukkha, the arising and passing away of all things, including wrong views of self, has fully developed an awakened and fully mature mind. When Kandana first heard these teachings, he declared to the Buddha, all conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation. The Buddha said, bingo, you are now Anakandana, the one who awakened. After that first teaching, he profoundly understood the interplay between anicca, anatta, and dukkha. All conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation. Remember last week's talk on the Kulasekhaka Sutta, we were talking about when these things that arise, especially troublesome things, but it could be anything that we feel attachment to remind ourselves that this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself, this is not who I am. And that immediately, or at least almost always, immediately brings peace of mind. Because you've created dispassion in a situation that previously was very passionate because of the attachment there. This is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. These five foundational qualities are maintained through sensual restraint, loving kindness toward self and others, mindfulness of what is occurring, and continually recognizing impermanence as life unfolds, which is exactly what the Buddha gave us in Eightfold Path. What blocks us from recognizing the impermanence of all things is our own conditioned thinking. That conditioned thinking creates a continuity in our experience that obscures impermanence from one moment to the next. We think we're maintaining an identity. And we are to a certain extent, but we're doing it at the sake of our own true knowing and really sanity. Let go of all of that eye-making, beginning with the need to associate with unskillful or foolish people, and then developing it even further through the Eightfold Path. When cruel or malevolent thoughts arise, the Buddha's teaching Magiya very, very clearly, engage in metta. Engage in metta. Again, metta is another very powerful way of ending conceit. It's really the reason why the Buddha originally taught the Metta Sutta. You know, the Metta Sutta was first taught to a group of monks that were very disturbed by the sounds that they heard in the forest, but also the feedback they were getting from other sects. They were leaving their minds fettered. Because they started thinking, well, how are we going to deal with these people? How are we going to get back at them? And the Buddha says, wish them goodwill and love and kindness. That's all. You'll let it go. Maintain your mindfulness in a very specific way. Be mindful of these things. Be mindful of the Eightfold Path. Any questions about tonight's article? No? All right, let's meditate and we'll go around the room. So I'd like to hear how your practice is going and if you have any questions or comments. And I start with Ram. Good to see you, Ram.
Well, the practice is steady. I'm still state of mind.
Good night, Matt.
If there's something about state of mind that somehow seems to bother me, I'm trying to figure out what it is. Part of it is, I think, spending too much time sleeping when I meditate.
That could do it.
You know. I'm trying to figure out, you know, where what I can do about it. But it's steady, half an hour every morning.
Good for you.
And the rest of the day, I can stay pretty good as far as mindfulness, at least right speech and right action. I'm happy with that. I'm just still puzzled about how my actual meditation goes.
Referring to troublesome mind states?
No, not so much that. It's not that when I'm, because they're there, that's fine, but they're not overwhelming. They're just there. I see that they're happening, and in the daytime too, I see they're happening, and I can let them go. Sometimes they're a bit more persistent, and it takes a bit more effort to abandon. It's more that when I'm in meditation, I'm not sure when I go back to the breathing, like, where the hell did I come from? Was I just sleeping, or was I...
Oh. I don't know that that's, at least in meditation, that's something to even consider. If you're in, during meditation, we meditate, meaning that we use that period of time to deepen our concentration. And we do that by recognizing that we're caught up in our thoughts or not even aware of our thoughts and coming back to the sensation of breathing. Off our cushion, you might want to think about that. But on your cushion, that keeps a meditation practice very well focused. Instead of, you know, people introduce all kinds of things and call it meditation rather than just to deepen concentration. And as we deepen our concentration and start to integrate the other factors of the Eightfold Path, insight, real useful insight into these things come up. And whatever it is, it has to do with some type of ego attachment. And you don't even have to recognize exactly what the attachment is to let go of the attachments, you know, to start diminishing that. Yeah. Very good thing to bring up, though. Thank you. Kevin, good to see you.
Good to see you, John. Thank you for the talk. It's very nice to be back at the Sangha. I've been a little bit busy lately, but sometimes I see you Saturday morning. So. This talk was really something I've been wanting to hear or needing to hear, I suppose, but maybe that's the wrong word. It's just very relevant for me in my life because my whole life is basically built on associations, I mean, professionally, socially, and then whatever's in between that. And it's really something that every moment is, it's my whole life. So I really have a lot to think about with this talk, and I think that it will bring up some things for me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. The other thing, again, the Buddha never said don't have any associations. He said, but look at them wisely. And oftentimes, we're in association with people that we really have no immediate control over anyway. And then it's important just to recognize how we could be influenced. And again, practicing restraint of sensory input, we cannot be influenced that way. In a negative way. So again, it's just a very useful teaching. Glad you're here tonight. Liz, good to see you.
Good to see you too, John. My meditation practice is going well. I was able to maintain it during a little stint of traveling that I did.
Probably.
Yeah. It was good. It's become more and more important, so I think when that happens, you're mindful of it. miss it.
Yeah.
So that's what we all have to say.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. Helen, good to see you.
Thank
How are you?
John, wonderful to be here. When I think about associations, I think about when you're younger and raising a family, so many of your associations are through your children and their families. And then you reach a certain point where that's not where all the new relationships come from. And you reach a point where you realize that you do have choices about who you include in your life.
Yeah.
And the way I picture it being visual is that there are circles around you, and you have your closest associations that you allow to come quite close to you. And then there are other people beyond that, and there are other people. Then there are just people who you do interact with in life, but maybe they just don't have that close of a connection. Maybe they're the people that you're involved with through work or other organizations you might be involved with. But maybe you are the person that listens to them when they need someone to talk to. But maybe you don't have to absorb and take on what it is they're dealing with. You know, sometimes they just need a sounding board and need to be listened to. And sometimes when someone is in that situation where they just need someone to hear them, it allows them time to put it all out there and sort of sort it out on their own.
Yeah.
And you don't have to carry their baggage. You don't have to put it on your roof. You don't have to line it up next to yours. You have this role of just being there to listen. So that's how I have. I have all of these circles around me. I have all of these orbits that help me navigate through life.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Kind of like what the Buddha did with Magia. You know, just because Magia was struggling with his Dhamma practice didn't mean that wasn't someone the Buddha wanted to associate with, and he gave him his time and his advice, hopefully helped him out too. So, thank you, Mary. Good to see you.
Good to meet you. My practice is going well. My actual application of some of this in work is hard. There seems to be a lot of politics going on around me, and I fall back on old patterns, and I have to really work hard to bring myself center. It's such a fast trigger when you're protecting yourself in a political and corporate environment.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of opportunity in the last few weeks to try to right set myself in the middle of what feels like chaos. And so I haven't figured it all out yet, but I'm working hard to bring it into my work world as well.
And that's remarkable to have that mindfulness, to know, what right behavior is in this situation. So good for you. Judy, how are you? It's good to see you.
I'm good, John. Glad to be here. My practice is going well, too. Steady. And I think I know that it's helped me during the day being aware more of the right speech, right everything. So more mindful of that. And this talk makes me realize, since having my business in Frenchtown, my associations here are so wonderful. I'm so grateful for the associations that I have here. It's like a really special place. Having said that, I had an interesting thing happen this morning where I went on my computer and LinkedIn, and I get these emails and it said, so-and-so, do you know so-and-so, and do you want to connect with them? And it was someone from our past here in town that ended very badly. It was not a good association. And my first reaction was, whoa. And then I thought, all right, And I actually sent her metta, which I felt really good about. And then Andrew and I were in the car together earlier, and I said, oh, guess what? This happened. And when I mentioned the person, we both went, whoa. And I said, but then I sent her metta. So I felt good about that. And he said, yeah, but you just went, ugh. But you're kidding.
The effects of metta are also impermanent.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. So it continues.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all.
Thank you. John, welcome to our Sangha. How was your meditation?
It's good.
You're able to engage in the method. You recognize that you're caught up in your thoughts. Come back to the sensation of breathing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the basic practice. That's what meditation. Remember that meditation is primarily for deepening concentration so that it can support the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. So it's an integral part, but it's not just meditation. So I'm glad you're here. I hope to see you in the future. Maura, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. It's a good, nice short sit-up. Thank you. It was, and I enjoyed the teaching period. It was funny, I was reflecting, my practice is good, and all that, but I was just contemplating the whole thing about associations and such, and I was, I don't often say this, but this was, over the weekend, I was with some family members that are challenging for me. So I'll just say my sister. my brothers, I don't have so much time.
This is being recorded.
Probably some crazy thing. I know. Okay. Well, let me. So the point was, I really. Well, there was also some. Okay. Now that I think about it a little bit more, I also had. I was distracted in my mind Sunday morning. Some things came into work related that were unsettling. I got texts on my phone. Troubling situation. But all of it, I was sitting having breakfast, brunch out somewhere, and I thought I was going to go through the roof. It was so much chatter, and the conversation was unpleasant, and da 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 da, and I was trying to work with my own mind. But I really felt like, in part, it was a distraction, but I had such a pit in my stomach, and I wanted to go backwards through the glass, and I let it off, and they went on, being part of that. But in reflecting, I almost feel like I've wavered on this contemplation or something that. So I didn't judge myself or feel that way. I just knew that I was really uncomfortable. And I was feeling frazzled. But I wonder now, like, because it was so out of, like, socially, I don't usually sit there and have a conversation that was so just jarring in so many ways. But that was a normal reaction. That's all. So when you talk about associations, right, sometimes we have to have associations, but we have to have, we have contact with people that might be less than skillful. And it was going on 24 plus hours of, I was just done. like Saturday night we had dinner, we went to play, and then I left the whole gang, and I just went and sat at Columbus Circle by the fountain. And walked through the park a little bit, and I felt so much better. And I think, oh my God, I'm so spoiled. I live alone. I don't have a lot of tolerance. I deal with a troubling work situation. I can do that, but like that put me over the top.
Is Tammy still alive? you did good. No, I
said. She said to me that she was concerned about me. She sent me a text the next day. that I looked like I had marks on my throat from stress, and she was wondering if I was okay. What? Everybody else says I look okay.
So you're right. Sometimes we don't really have a choice about who we're associating with. And then all you can do is what you did. Be at peace with a less than peaceful mind state. This is just what's occurring. And if you find yourself, if that happens again, maybe not with the same group, then you look at the association. Is this something that I have to do? And oftentimes it isn't. You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative mind state that develops. It could be just a very distracted mind state that feels good. Because oftentimes distraction feels good to an ego self. Look at that. You know, what we're trying to develop is that refined mindfulness that can hold in mind the Eightfold Path. So if we're engaged in associations that are primarily for distraction, even though it might be fun, it might not be a wholesome or skillful thing to do. And again, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have fun, but look at what we're getting out of certain things. You know,
right.
Maura's talking about a family situation. It's very difficult to say, I don't want anything to do with my family because they leave me agitated. That's not very skillful, but you can look at what the situation is.
I guess what also, and the point that I was trying to make, is that under those associations, the mind has a more of a tendency to become quite agitated, and the residue is lingering. So no matter, you know, I wouldn't consider myself some skilled, you know, practitioner. So I think that, like, that just pointed it a little bit more sharp, that that's a, you know, I'm certain.
Yes.
So, and as I mentioned, you know, I love my brother, so there's probably a little clinging and craving and just fun distraction. You know? So I'm not there, but oof, I can just see who the other treasure.
Thank you, Mark. Jen, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm great.
Do I have the marks on my
face? No. Hi.
It's good to see you.
Sorry. Yeah, this was, this talk was, I feel like it was, resonated a lot with kind of what I've been dealing with for the last 3-4 months. And also, I think it's interesting that everyone's talking about the associations part, but there was actually another 2 or 4?
Four.
4 things that he said. And but the associations really is where you see all of your stuff. And since I started, I've had to let some relationships go, and it really was because those relationships were either distracting for me or distracting for them or both, and it's also helpful in the relationships that we have that maybe, you know, we can't let go of their family or we wouldn't want to let go of. We just have, like, distracting aspects to them or distracting moments to them. Or, you know, I was with my family for 2 weeks on a vacation, and there was a lot of wrong speech that was going on. There was a lot of gossiping. There was a lot of, you know, oh, look at that person on the boardwalk dressed like that. Who would dress like that kind of stuff that was all uncomfortable, and my first reaction to it was that I was irritated because I felt like I had done all this work to undo all those behaviors and all that conditioned thinking, and now I see where I get it, you know. I'm like,
we all get it from somewhere.
Yeah, right. I'm watching, you know, having identified certain thoughts as conditioned thoughts, or maybe tag them as potentially conditioned thoughts that I wasn't ready to let go of. They've gone by once, and I said, that's suspicious. I'm just going to let it go. Maybe it comes up again. Suspicious, I'm going to let it go. Maybe it comes up again. Maybe this time it has some salience, and I, like, bounce it around for a little bit, and I let it go. But then when I hear the exact conditioned thought come out of my parents' mouth. There's an opportunity there. If I'm calm and peaceful and like not agitated by them, I can recognize that thought and I can go, I can just rip that weed right out. Now I can just totally let go of that one because it came from them. And I'm not mad about it. It's just who they are. So this was helpful in those times.
Yeah. And that's exactly how it should be in those times. That's part of your life as it occurs. And you're able to bring in your understanding of the Eightfold Path and see it differently and not react in a hurtful way.
Right.
That's how it is. Remember that the Buddha left his father's kingdom seeking understanding. Not because he saw his father and his family and the kingdom as something bad or hurtful. He described it as a confining place. It wasn't a place that he could develop his understanding. Again, not because of any negative way, just it was too damn comfortable for him. He moved out of it and eventually developed profound understanding. But he didn't tell people, everybody has to live in the forest in a cave. Anatha Pendinka comes to mind, who was a very well-established business person with a family. He took to the Dhamma, and it changed the way that he thought, but he didn't leave his family. He didn't stop being engaged in commerce. In fact, it was because he continued that he was able to be a great benefactor to the Buddha. So the Eightfold Path is the framework for everything, including choosing our associations. You know? Does it fit? Is the association supportive? And this is when we have a choice. Is the association supportive of fully developing right view? And if it's not, look at it. Is no one else that can say, well, if it's not, you better look at it. Does it leave you in an agitated, distracted space? Or does it serve your development of the Dhamma? We are so fortunate here, I keep saying it, to have the Sangha that we have, that we've developed the Dhamma well enough that we're able to support each other. We're able to be wise associates for each other. That's incredible. And it's also very uncommon.
One of the things Jen and I were talking about earlier was how one of the tools that we've learned from this is to give yourself that 5-second delay before you open your mouth.
Pause button.
Gives you time to assess what just happened or what was just said or what you said and then respond more appropriately.
The pause button is rooted in concentration. That's, again, a very practical application of why we do this. Thank you. Diane, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I had 3 ice cream sandwiches on the way home from work today.
Wow, good for you.
And I haven't had ice cream in maybe 4-5 years. And I just had some ice cream. I thought, I've been a good girl this long, I'm going to have this ice cream. It was significant to me because I've been on this healing path now consciously for like 16 years, and on this journey I have found that I learned a term called healing crises. And a healing crisis is when you're doing everything right and all of a sudden it feels like you've done absolutely nothing right, and things, it feels like everything's falling apart. And I was so glad to find out about crisis, because like it was a sanity kind of thing. And then through meditation, I just feel that meditation is one of the most valuable tools that I have ever learned, and I'm so grateful for your steadfastness in these meetings. I just really appreciate it. Through meditation I realize one of the healing crises I have is I try too hard. I want to do it absolutely perfectly. Mm-hmm. This is what the sutta says. This is, I didn't do it, and I'll beat myself up, or they didn't do it, and I'll point a finger. And what I'm coming to is I am just becoming so happy. Oh, I saw that. Ah, I recognize it. I didn't just sucked into it. I saw it, and that's almost like, and I do in a way celebrate. Oh wow, that's so cool. And this observer in my mind is just a wonderful companion to, and I give the observer more and more permission to, you know, to be there. And but this and I was, this resonated, the sutta today resonated with me. As a matter of fact, this morning I just let go of a client. I didn't fold her rags right. And there were other things. She told me, well, to take off my blouse and put on my apron and then do this, this, and this. And, like, nobody tells me to take off my blouse and put on my apron. It was just a wrong situation. It had developed into a very unsafe situation. And safe is what I think, that's the wrong term, but safe is what meditation teaches me. In being gentle with myself, I do not have to put myself in harm's way anymore. I do not have to associate with people who continually demean me. And that has got to be one of the most liberating things of my life, because it's like one of my life sentences was, you know, to continually seek out people in my childhood family who put me down and stepped on me and abused me and try to make it right. And meditation teaches me, you know, and with metta, I don't have to do that anymore. I can appreciate who I am. And it's not the ego kind of thing, it's just my existence, or not even that. I don't know what the right word is, but meditation has just so gently pulled me out of such a feeling of unworthiness and lifted me to a place of self-respect and dignity. And I don't know whether those are all, you know, ego-type things. They don't feel like it. So when I get into this perfectionist thing, one of the things that I do is I back off. And I have stopped meditating for several days at a time. And I found, like, wow, I can't do that. I lose my best friend. It's like, you know, something vital I've lost. And then I'll have a day like yesterday, which was really interesting. My heart started beating really fast. I was in so much fear. I didn't know what I couldn't even put my finger on it. It was just driving me up a wall. And I thought, oh, I'll meditate. So I sat down and meditated for 20 minutes. And I felt better, but it wasn't gone. And I thought, the Dharma teaches me that I don't have to suffer, and this feels like suffering, whatever the fear, and I started to be able to name the fears. So I sat again for 20 minutes, and then it got better. And then, like, around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I sat for 30 minutes. And I felt, like, restored. And it's just a wonderful journey.
It is. Thank you. So glad you're here tonight. Bonnie, how are you?
Okay. I had read the sutta earlier, and it always resonates more clearly when I hear it read. And like everybody, I think all of those things that are present to learn from. I think for me, it's also association. And so I feel like I'm at I have all these opportunities now to practice. Taking care of myself in a different way, and it's difficult and it's sad for me to feel like I resonate with a lot of the things that people are saying about associations, and sort of like Helen was talking about, like sort of orbit circles, and Reiki, they have the circles they talk about that sort of are moving out and away from the orbit. We like sometimes we touch and then maybe we turn around and we move out from those places, kind of, and you just have to let it be, and that it's okay, and I have to let it happen. And the thing from last week, particularly what you said earlier, was really I've been kind of telling that to myself, particularly, and that also eases my own sort of self-harshness, which is, it's not me, it's not mine, it's not myself. But then you said something else. Yeah, it's not myself, it's not.
This is not mine, this is not who I am?
It's not who I am. That was like the fourth one, yeah. And I hadn't had that in there. And it's sort of not who I want to be, how I cling to certain things. So it's,
yeah.
You know, it's growth.
That's profound growth. Again, it's the practical application. You know, sometimes the application of the Dhamma is so ordinary that we lose the extraordinary nature of that level of mindfulness. Yeah. Good for you. Glad you're here. Lorna, how are you?
Good evening, John.
Good evening. Quite all right. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Would you read, if you could, the part about the self-effacing, like you mentioned that, because I was trying to remember again, because that was also very, again, you know, in terms of not in line with great speech.
Didn't actually say self-effacing from the day I caught
that.
Yeah, self-adding self is redundant to that.
Yeah.
Although I had to look at that a few times when I first read it.
Effacing
is self-effacing.
Would mean not proliferating a sense of I, me, mine. The impersonal nature.
The third quality to develop is speech that is effacing and that does not promote the ego self. Effacing speech relaxes the mind and conduces towards dispassion, peace, direct knowledge, unbinding, enlightenment, and nibbana. So it's interesting even how the Buddha addressed himself. He never called himself the Buddha, at least that I could come across. He referred to himself as the Tathagata, T-A-T-H-A-G-A-T-A, maybe T-H-A, which simply means the one who has gone forth. In the context, what that means is the one who figured this out first, and now he has gone forth to teach others. What he's basically saying is, if you got to call me anything, call me the teacher. That's it. And that... Isn't that an accurate description of the role that he played for 45 years, the teacher? No real self in here. Not the world's greatest teacher, not the awakened teacher, not the head of the Sangha, nothing. Just the teacher. And even how, as he describes himself in some of the suttas, he's even using that in context. Like he talked about his past lives, and even when he says, I was an unawakened bodhisattva, that's a pretty effacing or self-effacing way to put it, wasn't it? He's not playing up the fact that he had developed to the level of being a bodhisattva, despite the fact that he wasn't yet awakened. Put it in context. Did that answer your question, or was that what you hoped to get out of that?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. So any other questions or comments on this? Again, it's just getting back to what most of us keyed on, including me, the associations part, it's just to remind us that the people that we associate with can and often is an act of clinging or an act of attachment, and to look at it. It's not saying that it's bad. It's not saying that they're good. But in relation to the Dhamma, if our associations are distracting, especially in here, I mean, one of the reasons why we're so fortunate to have a well-structured Sangha is just that, that we're not associating with a lot of different stuff in this room. I remember talking to a few people saying that what I'd really like to have in Frenchtown is one place in the whole world, there's probably others, that is just focused on the teachings of the Buddha and nothing else. And it makes all the difference in the world. What?
You said that more than once.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to have one place in
Frenchtown. I will tell you, my daughter's feedback was she wanted to live in this room.
Aww.
Really?
Really?
I said,
really?
I want to live in this room.
Wow.
Aww.
Yeah. Great.
Well.
Now I just have to get it back.
That was really, really nice to hear. Okay, if there's no other questions or comments, we'll finish with the Buddha's words on metta, since I mentioned it earlier, the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And so metta is both an aspiration for those of us on the path to develop ongoing goodwill and love and kindness, and it's also an expression of an awakened human being, a fully mature human being. The Buddha's words on metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.